Elagos returned to the parlor after having completed a circuit through the suite. "There is much more elsewhere, including things suggesting a fair amount of intimacy in the refresher station and bedroom."
"In her fondest dreams, Elagos."
I gave him a confident smile.
"We've got a month. In that time, I intend to become the Admiral's worst nightmare."
"Good. I applaud your decision." The Kamasi smiled. "I should add, I think it is one worthy even of your grandfather."
"My grandfather?"
I stared at Elagos, gape-mouthed. "You're not referring to Rostick Horn, are you?" The Kamasi shook his head and pointed me toward one of the suite's chairs. "Memories of momentous events become strong and almost tangible to the Kamasi. We refer to these memories as memniae. They are more precious to us than any material possession. The truly significant thing about memniae is that we can share them with others. The ability to transfer them is limited by consanguinity, which is why our clans often intermarry. My markings are common among the Kla, the maternal clan into which I was born. It is fairly easy for me to transfer a memnis to another member of the Kla clan."
My head came up. "My grandfather knew a Kamasi Jedi named Yelenik Itkla."
"My mother's brother." Elagos's face took on a happy expression. "When the Kamasi come to know a Jedi and form a bond with him, we can transfer a memnis to him. It is through a memnis my uncle gave to me that I recognized you. You have Nezha's eyes, his scent, and his sense."
"Your uncle was Yelenik?
Where is he? Can he tell me more about Nezha?" Elagos blinked his eyes rapidly. "My uncle was not on Kamas when our world was immolated. He was visiting a friend on Alderaan, and convinced that friend to provide a safe haven for other Kamasi survivors."
I felt my blood run cold.
"He died on Alderaan." Elagos nodded slowly.
"What was the memory of my grandfather he gave to you? Can you give it to me?"
Elagos shook his head. "I do not think you are quite enough a Jedi, nor enough of a friend for us to be able to do this yet." He hesitated. "And I am not certain you would want this memory. It is of your grandfather's death."
I sank back in the chair and closed my eyes. What I knew of my grandfather's death was a nightmare, but at least I could treat it like a dream. I didn't want to think about getting it full-blown with emotion from my grandfather's friend. "You're right. Perhaps that's not a memory to which I am entitled."
"We shall have to remedy that, then." The Kamasi smiled again, slyly this time. "How will we proceed?"
"Every good operation starts with intelligence. The Invids based here are definitely the spine of Tavira's operation."
"Destroying a planet of pirates is a tall order for a lone Jedi Knight."
I held my hands up. "Since I can't fly for a bit, I have ample reasons for wandering about. Once I know where the support structures are for the Invid organization, I can take them apart. It won't be easy, but it's got to be done."
"As my uncle often said, there are attempts, and there are accomplishments. History's only praise one."
I laughed. "I'll accomplish some healing, then we'll go from there." After a week, I had enough information to start planning my campaign. I laid everything out, figured who I would hit first and how, then where I would move next. I had to hit hard to keep the pressure on, yet I had to strike at random so I could not be anticipated and trapped. I chose the survivors as my first targets. I knew them better than I knew anyone else, so I had an edge on getting into their minds. They were also the most disciplined of the Invids. So if I could break them, make them skittish, the nervousness would bleed over into the other groups. I took a seat in the crash cantina at a table in the back. Captain Jacob Knive normally sat there, and not too long afterward he joined me. As we sat there chatting, I pushed an empty chair out with my foot as if someone were drawing it back to sit.
"You can't sit here. This is a private table."
As I said that, I reached out with my senses and projected an image into Jacob's brain.
Jacob's head came up and he blanched.
"Not possible!"
The figure he saw across the table was Captain Zalisi Unar, one of the Imperial captains responsible for the deaths of so many of Knives' comrades. Unar looked directly into Knives' eyes.
"You should have died the day all your friends did. If you'd fought harder, they might have lived. You failed them, and now you will join them.
Doom is coming to Korkrus. All your victims will be avenged."
Jacob stood abruptly and threw his mug of lum through the phantasm. I let the image fade into a bloody mist that drifted away as the mug shattered against the pillar. Jacob stood there, trembling, then looked around at everyone else in the cantina. Their attention had been drawn to him when the mug exploded, but they had seen nothing prior to that. Jacob pointed at the chair.
"Did you see him?"
People shook their heads. He looked at me.
"You saw him, didn't you, Janos?"
I shuddered and drained my brandy snifter.
"I saw him."
I poured more brandy into my snifter and looked up at Jacob, ignoring the tightening knot of people closing in on us. "What did he mean, doom is coming to Korkrus?" Jacob snatched my brandy away from me and swallowed it all in one gulp.
"I don't know, but it is not good. Not good at all."
Within 12 hours, the story of the visitation had spread all over Vlarnia and had taken on a life of its own. I had people tell me what they had seen, describing a vision I knew they never saw. The warning seemed to worm its way into the minds of many, which was my intent. When things started to happen, they would link them back to the warning. I was pleased the first effort had so grand an effect, but simple ghostly comings and goings were not going to convince the Invids that it was time to abandon Tavira. It was time for something a bit more direct and painful. I donned a hooded cloak and slipped out into the night. I reached inside to tap the Force so I could expand my sphere of responsibility and locate someone who needed help. Even though I sensed where the three of them were, I heard her sobs before I ever saw them. 2 drunken laser lords had trapped an Indig woman between them and hustled her into an alley. I moved as silent as shadow, grabbed the first man by the scruff of the neck and smashed his face into the alley wall. Something crunched when he hit, then he slumped to the ground. A half step forward and I brought the pommel of my lightsaber up, catching the second man with an uppercut. One hand went to his mouth and the other dug for the blaster holstered on his hip. As he started to draw the weapon, I rotated the lightsaber's hilt in my hand and ignited the silver blade. I arced it down, catching the rising blaster at barrel and grip, dropping pieces of it and 2 of his fingers to the ground. Before his rising partner could draw his weapon, my lightsaber stabbed through his shoulder, burning a very neat button-sized hole through bone and flesh. He stared down at the silvery energy shaft, then his eyes rolled up into his head, and he fainted. I snapped the blade off before his falling body could tear. I wanted neither of them dead. These men would have scars and tell a wonderful tale. What the visitation had begun, these 2 would continue. The lightsaber made quite the impression on everyone. According to the 2 laser lords, the Jedi creature that had jumped them had been 2 meters plus tall and had congealed out of the night itself. The Jedi attacked them without provocation and promised to do the same to everyone on the planet. The captains of the various groups in Vlarnia offered a 10,000 credit reward for the Jedi's head. For the next several nights, I stalked and hit bands of pirates wandering the streets in search of trouble. Each encounter occurred differently. The fact that many of the pirates reinforced their courage with lots of rum or whiskey helped me immeasurably. Drunks have often seemed incredibly lucky, and in Vlarnia they were as well. But all of their luck was bad. Desertions decimated the various pirate crews, and the cutting edge of the Invids was considerably dulled. One morning, I awakened to a pounding on my suite's door, and Tavira stalked in. She shoved me back on the bed, then stood there with her fists on her hips.
"Pleased to see me?"
"Yes. Good. And you've not been bothered by this Jedi?" I shook my head. "I've come to no harm, no." Then she slapped me, hard. "What did I do?"
"It's not what you did. It's what you failed to do. You should have dealt with this Jedi situation."
"Fighting the Jedi is not easy," I don't want you to fight it. I want you to lead the others in opposition to it. You do that, and I will take care of the Jedi.
Her fists returned to her hips.
I'll be back within the week. I expect to see you in command.
I did exactly what Leonia Tavira wanted. I started making the rounds of the remaining groups on Corcrus. I visited them all in their strongholds, snapping orders, inventing security procedures, threatening, bribing, hinting darkly that any group that didn't get tough would be melded in with other groups, losing their autonomy. The survivors took heart immediately. What was truly great about this effort and the rebound in morale was that it rested very strongly on my representations of Tavira's plans to deal with the Jedi. I promised a trap that would destroy him. And I knew, as the Invids put their trust in me, transferring much of it from their trust in Tavira, that if I was killed by the Jedi, morale would collapse flat, and Tavira would lose the combat arm of the Invids. How I would have the Jedi kill me was something I hadn't had time to figure out yet. Grizzly would probably be best. To heighten the tension concerning the confrontation, I decided that the Jedi would surface at the crash cantina. I ignited my lightsaber.
Where is Idunian?
A chorus of denials came back, weak and timid.
Tell him I await him.
I kept my voice very low and as menacing as I could.
When we meet, his time will be at an end.
I slipped into the night and saw a knot of 5 individuals turn in my direction. The fact that Janos's brave talk had spawned hunter gangs didn't surprise me, and I'd dealt with that many individuals before. I prepared to project an image of myself actually walking further along a non-existent part of the alley. Getting them to chase me and hit the wall had worked wonders before. When I sent them the illusion, they seemed to look directly at me, which meant it wasn't taking. Something very odd here. I threw back my cloak and brought the lightsaber out. I thumbed it to life and wove the humming blade back and forth before them. One by one, they likewise freed their gun arms. Blue, yellow, red, orange, and purple lightsaber blades sprang to life in their hands. 5 of them, kissing in concert. They advanced, and I realized there really wasn't any way things could get much worse. Then a 6th silhouette appeared at the mouth of the alley, and a green lightsaber sprouted in his hands. The man started forward. No one need die here tonight. I knew that voice. Luke! And I recognized in his warning to those I faced a directive to me. I slid to the right and blocked a red slash. Pivoting, I snapped a sidekick into my foe's belly. She was wearing an armored breastplate, which, however, didn't stop her from catching her heels on debris and going down, temporarily taking her out of the fight. Luke engaged yellow and purple as I ducked beneath a blue slash. A quick punch to the throat choked Blue. Then I grabbed him by the clasp of his cloak and flung him into the alley wall. His armor clicked hard against the bricks, then he dropped back, all boneless, and the dead man's switch on his lightsaber shut it off. My lightsaber's heavy pommel caught Orange right behind the ear, or where the ear would have been on a human. As Orange dropped senseless to the ground, his hood slid back, and I saw he was a Rodian. I reached down and flicked his blade off, then straightened up as Luke rose above Red. Luke shut off his weapon, and I did the same with mine, plunging the alley into darkness.
Nice sense of timing. If you hadn't arrived, the 5 of them would have killed me, clean and quick.
I shivered.
How did you find me?
In the faint light from the street, I saw Luke's expression sharpen. I knew, if you had learned all you needed to learn, that I would meet you here, and that we would be allies. As for the when, with that I needed some help. A silhouette framed itself in the alley.
Ural?
I ran forward.
Ural, what are you doing here?
I am a findsman.
The Gan shrugged, as if that should have explained everything.
The important thing of being a findsman is knowing when to look. I knew the when was now, and went to Master Skywalker to tell him that.
Luke waved us back into the alley.
We have to get our sleeping friends out of here. They know where Mirax is.
I nodded. Can't be far from here because Tavira brought them within a day of hearing we had Jedi trouble. Who are they? I don't know. Luke shook his head. We better find out fast, because if we don't, if someone learns they've failed in their mission, it may cost Mirax her life. I reached down and hefted Orange up by his belt, letting Ural grab Yellow and Purple. Getting information out of them will be tough. They know how to use the Force. I think I have something that can help us in that regard. Luke gestured, allowing Red and Blue to float up into the air. Lead on, Kieran. As Ural explained it to me, when is just an aperture on time, and we don't want it to snap shut before we can get through to your wife. We took our five opponents back to the hotel. Ural left the two he'd carried to Elagos, then returned to the spaceport to fetch something for Luke. We stripped our prisoners out of their armor, separated them, and treated their cuts and bruises. Ural returned with a cage-like device that had a small furred reptile suspended inside of it. This is an Iselamiri, one of two I brought with me. Luke rested a hand on the cage and looked a bit fatigued. It is unique among living creatures, in that it seems to project a field that negates the Force. I tried to reach inside myself to tap the Force, but I got nothing. It's like I'm back where I started before the Academy. How do you think this will affect our guests? Luke managed a smile, but that seemed to tax him. I suspect they will feel very vulnerable. Good. I gave him a feral grin. Just follow my lead. We picked Red to be the first subject. When I saw her eyes flicker open, I looked back at Luke and nodded as if I'd received a telepathic message from him. Yes. I will see what I can find out. Give her a moment to recover. Luke stared at me for a second, then impatiently flicked a hand in my direction. I smiled. Quick study. Let's hope she isn't. I squatted down next to the chair in which we had bound her. Forgive me for having to restrain you like this. I wish I could make things more pleasant, but he's rather insistent. I know you're feeling odd right now because you have lost the use of certain senses you consider part of you. He has removed your access to them to make it easier for me to probe your mind. But I know how unpleasant that will be for you. She shook her head adamantly.
I will not betray my people.
No, of course. But we have to find the Invidious, and quickly. Leonia Tavira has to be stopped from being able to harm anyone else.
You can't stop her.
I stood and walked over to confer with Luke. I frowned to get him to give me that expression. When he did look at me angrily, I recoiled.
But you can't be so cruel. To remove her access to the Force forever isn't going to do her or us any good. I don't think she should be made an example of. It won't make the others more tractable.
Luke really got into his part, jabbing me hard in the chest with two fingers. I returned to Red's side, rubbing my chest.
I really do think I can get him to unblock your access to the Force. You just need to tell us where Tavira keeps the Invidious.
No, I cannot tell you.
I rested a hand on her shoulder. Well, I know you're thinking about things from your point of view. Think of it like this, though. You didn't get me. Tavira will see you as having failed. She'll see herself as betrayed, and she will act. What you have to ask yourself is this. Do you want to be the cause of her killing all your people? Or do you want to let the guys who defeated you take their run at Tavira? Red cracked a little, and we were able to use what we learned from her to bust the rest of the Genserai. That's what they called themselves. Wide open. The history of the Genserai's involvement with Tavira was one of mistakes from the start. Tavira, fleeing a New Republic task force, jumped to Yumpla, the large seaport on Susavi, a moon of the seventh planet of the Suarbi system. Tavira had the local imperial governor shot, then declared the planet liberated from the oppression of the Empire and in opposition to the New Republic. Tavira put the Genserai in the position of serving her. Failure to serve her would result in the annihilation of Yumpla. The Genserai had picked up on Mirax's intentions when she'd come hunting the Invids. They nabbed her and brought her to Susavi. Tavira had wanted to slay her, but the Genserai leader, known as the Sarai Kar, had insisted on keeping her alive and imprisoned in the old planetary governor's palace. Learning what we had, Luke and I knew we had to hurry to Susavi. We decided we'd leave the Genserai on Korkrus in the company of Anissa Namiri. We knew we had to trust someone to hang on to them, so we went to Jacob Knive and revealed to him my identity as Kieran Halcyon, Jedi Knight, and that of Luke Skywalker. We explained to him that we were going to finish the Invids and stop Tavira, and offered him a choice. We could destroy the last of the survivors, or give them the same chance at a new start that the New Republic had offered other victims of Imperial aggression and coercion. Knive willingly exchanged entertaining 5 guests, and an Iselamiri, for a new life. Before we left Korkrus, we shot 2 messages out. One went to General Kraken, telling him we had located the Invidious's home, and were going to take the ship out. Data letting him know where we were going was left with Knive. But we didn't transmit it directly to Kraken, because we didn't want a New Republic task force showing up and alerting Tavira to what was going on before we had a chance to get in and rescue Mirax. I also sent a message to Booster, telling him that I'd located Mirax and was going after her. Luke and I had tried, albeit briefly and in vain, to convince Ural and Elagas to remain behind on the ship, but Elagas noted that between his sense of smell and Ural's ability to see beyond what we humans rather arrogantly call the visible light spectrum, we could move through the night more effectively and without having to rely upon our force-enhanced senses, delaying our detection by the Genserai. We had to agree. We stalked through the darkened streets of Yumfla with impunity, all but unnoticed. Finally, we reached a building across a small greensward from the Imperial Governor's palace. The building itself had an 8-meter-high wall running around it, with towers at each of the 4 corners. Stormtroopers patrolled in pairs along the wall, and 2 each stood in the corner towers.
"What are you doing there?"
A stormtrooper and his partner appeared from nowhere around the corner of the building. Their blasters came up.
"You're coming with us."
I glanced at Luke, then shrugged and depressed my thumb, shooting the silver blade straight through the stormtrooper's chest. I shoved him back into his partner, who pulled his trigger, spraying shots out into the night. My lightsaber came across and trimmed his shoulders down to the level of his arm. I ducked down as the stormtroopers on the palace wall started shouting and firing shots in our direction. Alarms began to blare. Luke and I sprinted toward the palace gate, cutting back and forth to make ourselves difficult targets. As I ran, I opened myself to the force and felt a flood of data pour in. I cut to the left and whipped my lightsaber around, batting a blaster bolt out into the night. I fended off 2 more bolts, wishing I could manage, as Luke did, to direct them back at the men who had fired them, then reached the sanctuary of the recessed gate. I pushed my sphere of responsibility to see what was on the other side awaiting us, but found no one. I pushed further, then smiled. "I have her, Luke. This close, I have Mirax. Tower, your side, down." The Jedi Master smiled. "Let's not keep her waiting." We slashed down through the big metal doors, carving a hole. I stepped inside, then slashed up and through the elbow of a stormtrooper, shoving his blaster carbine down to spray us. I tugged the carbine from his falling hand and triggered a burst of bolts at a stormtrooper hunkering down from Elagas' covering fire. Ural came through the gate and laid down a pattern of suppression fire that held off the stormies coming from the far tower. We entered, and I sprinted behind Luke to the stairs leading down. Luke stood by a control panel, scanning a readout of prisoner names. "Holding cell 02021020. There she was, just lying there. The silver light from above bathed her in a radiance that left her skin almost pure white. She looked perfect and asleep, and I felt my throat tighten. "You are incredibly beautiful, Mirax, and you've been away far too long." Luke squeezed past me and leaned over her face. "Feels like a Jedi hibernation trance." He reached his hand toward her forehead. "There's a Jedi technique used..." I grabbed his wrist and smiled at him. "She's my wife. I'd like to help. You bring her out of it and I'll let her know she's been missed." Luke nodded. "Ready? Let's do it." I gave him a nod, then leaned down
and kissed my wife on the lips. Mirax's brown eyes blinked open, and she began to smile. She grabbed a fistful of my tunic and pulled me back down, covering her mouth with mine. We kissed with the urgency of lost love found, hearts, pain eased. I stroked her hair, and she kept me close. And then we both had to come up for air. Pulling back so I could see all of her face, I smiled.
Hi. Hi yourself. You're pretty cute.
She smiled back up at me, sending a jolt through me from head to toe and back again.
Of course, if my husband finds out you kissed me like that, you'll be in big trouble.
Luke burst out laughing. Her, I like. I kissed her on the tip of her nose. You remember Luke Skywalker, right? The distant whine of blasters accompanied Elagos's entry.
Uril has them cut off at the landing. We'd better move before they bring up reinforcements.
I cleared my throat. Any chance we can make it back to the spaceport from here?
Elagos shook his head. Not likely.
Mirax hefted the blaster carbine I'd left on the beer.
Then we go to the top of the big tower. They have a landing pad there. That's how they brought me in. We steal some speeder bikes or a shuttle and make a dash for your ship.
Luke nodded. It's a plan. Mirax turned and pointed back away from the stairs.
Along here, there's a corridor that goes over to the main building.
Luke led the way. Need to be careful. The stormtroopers we can pick out with the Force, but the Jensari, they're more difficult.
You!
The shouted words came angry, though the speakers in the comm unit couldn't quite convey all the outrage they contained. I glanced to my left and saw a hologram of Tavira standing there, just shy of life-size, her hands on her hips.
You were the Jedi at Corcrus.
I nodded.
At your service.
I pointed to the sky. New Republic will be here in no time. The days of the invidious are over.
Never!
We picked up the pace, racing into the main building. Blaster bolts, red and blue, whined and streaked as they burned into white marble pillars or black wall tiles. Luke was able to redirect bolts at our enemies, knocking them down or making them break cover long enough for Uru, Elagos, or Mirax to shoot them from a flanking position. As we climbed toward the building's upper reaches, we felt a tremor course through it.
A shuttle's going up.
Elagos frowned.
Tavira must be running.
We pushed on, clearing the last length of corridor, then topped several steps that opened onto the foyer of a grand chamber. Six creatures stood in the open central part of the floor. One, a woman wearing a gray cloak with streaks of matching gray in her long brown hair, stood in the center. Mirax whispered to me that during her incarceration, she had heard the other Jensari refer to this woman as their Sarai Kar, their leader. A mask hid her face. Arrayed behind her in an arc, five of the Jensari waited. The light cast long shadows over their masks, but I caught details. Reptilian, insectoid, and mammalian. The central figure raised her arm and pointed a lightsaber toward me. The gold blade shot out.
Come, Halsin. Destroy or be destroyed. There is no alternative at this juncture in time.
I lit my lightsaber as she dove toward me and blocked her first sweeping blow low and to the right. I anticipated the wrist twist and allowed her to rake her gold blade back across where I had been. I ducked beneath her cut, then slashed at her legs, but she danced above my blade. As she landed, I swept my legs through her legs, clicking her ankles together and toppling her. I sprang up to press my attack, but she never hit the ground. She turned her fall into a languid backward somersault. The second she touched down, she drove at me again, feinting left and right. Off to my left, Luke moved through the Jensari. A quick parry with his lightsaber, and then a push with the Force, and two of them went down hard. Another parry, and the application of the lightsaber's dark end to a head, dropped another to the floor. A telekinetic tug on a mask blinded one, while he fought another to a standstill, their blades arcing and screaming as they met. The Sarai Kar came at me with cold fury, her blade held in the style of the Anzati who slew my grandfather. Snarling, she nodded sharply at me, and I heard a rustling. One of her students' discarded cloaks wrapped itself around my ankles and dumped me unceremoniously on my back. I blacked out for a second, then saw the Sarai Kar standing over me, her golden blade raised for an overhand blow that would split my head in two. Without conscious thought, I reacted through the Force. Into her brain, I projected an image of Nikos Tiris lying there in my place. She hesitated.
Master?
Mirax's stun bolt hit the Sarai car square in the chest and dropped her out of my sight. I rolled up to one knee and kissed Mirax full on the lips.
Thanks for the rescue.
My pleasure.
We have a problem. Elagos punched a button and a hologram appeared. I fed the system data from our ship into the projector here. I show the Invidious leaving the ring, and it's headed this way. I shook my head. Tavira doesn't like losing, and she'll strafe us to get rid of us. Yumfla's done. Suddenly, several more ships appeared in the image, slicing in toward Susevi. I have a ship identified as the Errant Venture entering the system. Invidious is deploying clutches and coming about to engage Errant Venture. They should close to range in 5 minutes. Mirax shook her head.
We can't let them do that.
I stood. Elagos, can you open up a comm line to the Venture? Mirax, you can talk your father into running.
Leaving us here to be lit up by Tavira? Not likely.
She shivered. She'll vape the Venture, then vape us. Luke looked at me. Try to call Tavira. Maybe we can make a deal with her.
No way.
I shook my head. If I know her at all, there's just no way we can convince her. I stopped.
Sith spawn, I'm so stupid.
I ran toward the stairs to the observation deck. Don't worry, I'll take care of it. I'll move her right out of here. I gathered the force inside of me and projected my awareness out until I found a place where arrogance and anger and outrage all seemed to collect. Then I pushed my way into Tavira's mind and flowed into the place where her fears and confidence dwelt. I pushed a bit of doubt into her mind.
It was impossible, wasn't it, that the New Republic would send so small a force after her? Hadn't Janos said a task force was on its way?
I latched on to the unease she was feeling with how simple her victory would be.
We used the Jensenai to hide our ship, but the New Republic, they would make more use of their Jedi.
I let her feel that if she sharpened her mind, she could pierce the veil of deception the Jedi were casting over her and her crew. She concentrated and pushed, accomplishing nothing, really, but I rewarded her for it. The holographic representation of the Errant Venture evaporated to be replaced by a bigger ship, a much bigger ship, a superstar destroyer that would eat up her Impstar Deuce.
Belay those orders, I heard her shout. It's a trap, a Jedi trap. Plot me a course out of here.
From below, I heard Elagos.
The Invidious is coming about. Tavira is leaving the system.
Things quieted down on Susevi fairly quickly. We called Booster and through him got Jacob Knive. Jacob apologized for having given Booster the data we'd left behind for Kraken, but he had been most insistent and had an Impstar Deuce to back things up. Knive contacted Colonel Gort and offered to consider her and any ex-invids who stopped their fighting to be members of the survivors under the deal Luke and I had offered him. Colonels Silku and Gort were able to work out terms under which the survivors would be allowed to keep their ships. I had no doubt that within several weeks, Susevi would petition the New Republic for entry as a full member, complete with a fighter force, and that the survivors would find themselves a nice little home. In addition to that, Elagos indicated the possibility of moving at least part of the Kamasi remnant to Susevi. Somehow I thought Kamasi fellowship and guidance would go a long way towards making Susevi strong and peaceful. The Jensarai still presented us something of a problem, but here too the Kamasi touch provided a solution that could not have otherwise been possible. The Sarai Kar, when she regained consciousness, seemed truly surprised to be alive. The fact that her students had not been slain and had been allowed to retain custody of their armor and lightsabers clearly confused her.
"Is this how you choose to mock me, Halcyon?"
She waved a hand at her students.
"You have them here to show me that you have won them over to your murderous ways?"
I looked to Luke. "I'm not tracking here."
"Neither am I."
Elagos rested hands on our shoulders.
Perhaps you would permit me.
Elagos moved forward and dropped to one knee before the Sarai car. He kept his voice low and respectful.
The Gensurai are your creation.
The Sarai car bowed her head.
Yes, that is so.
I glanced down as factoids began to slot together for me. When she'd had me at her mercy, I'd projected Tyrus's image from my dream into her brain, because I had recognized her fighting style as that of the Anzati Jedi who'd slain my grandfather. I'd done it instinctively, and had missed entirely the significance of her saying, "Master," as she hesitated. She was seeing me as my grandfather, or someone who had come to finish what Neja Halcyon had started. She thrust a finger at me.
It was a Halcyon who slew my master and my husband.
Elagos placed a hand on her knee. She looked sharply at him.
You were not the Jedi there that day.
No, I was not. But I will share with you a secret. The Kamasi have a gift in which significant memories can be shared. He grasped my hand, dragging me forward.
I have come to know this man under a variety of identities, one of them being Kieran Halcyon, the grandson of Neja Halcyon. Neja is the Halcyon Jedi you accuse of being a murderer, and the Kamasi who was with him that day was my uncle. My uncle shared with me the memory of his friend's death. I would share it with you in hopes you would understand the other point of view.
The Sarai car held her hand out to Elagos.
Show me the memory.
Elagos stood.
I do not know you well enough for me to transfer the memory to you. I do know Kieran well enough, and he can project it into your mind.
Am I sending just to her, or do I include Master Skywalker and her apprentices? Luke smiled. I would be honored to share that memory. The Sarai car nodded.
Let them see.
I felt a tingle run through my hand and up into my brain. I touched the Force and entwined it with what I was getting from Elagos, then pushed it out toward the others in the room. I found myself in Yelenic Itkla's flesh, with my grandfather beside him, whom he classified as Spicewood. The Kamasi's acute sense of smell led him to store identity information with scent rather than name. Pain exploded on my left flank as a red-haired woman, Dust Rose, raked the tip of her blue lightsaber across my flesh. My Kamasi muscles tensed, then brought my blade up in a rising slash that opened her from hip to shoulder. Through the link with the Sarai car, I felt a jolt of grief at Dust Rose's death. But it was as nothing as I saw Spicewood on the ground, his lightsaber beyond his reach. Then Spicewood dove for his blade, and the Anzati night sweat stabbed down. I could almost feel the blade burning its way through my friend. I would have expected him to die instantly, but he managed to smile. The azure blade fixing him to the ground sputtered and died, and in an instant I knew what he had done, how he had employed the rarest of all Jedi gifts, and what a terrible price he had paid for it. Night sweat exploded, as did the dark Jedi I, as the Kamasi had slain. Their mortal bodies no longer able to contain the dark side energy, it flashed out in a blue fireball that shattered the Duracreet dome above us. I rushed to Spicewood, pulling him clear as the dome began to collapse. I knelt in the dirt, cradling my friend's head in my lap, murmuring,
"Neja, you knew you could not defeat Tyrus with a lightsaber, so you found another means to protect me."
I caressed my grandfather's face, wiping away the blood from the cut on his head, then was aware of the lessening of his weight upon my thighs. I looked down and saw him fade away, his burned clothes collapsing, his lightsaber settling into the dust. Beyond his boots, the last section of the dome groaned and sagged in, with a couple of the tiles that had been set into it exploding into fragments. I picked one up and ran my thumb over it, feeling the strange glyphs incised into it. I began to shiver, and knew that I had to get back to Corellia. Nisha's family would want to know he died a hero. The memory faded out as my vision of the room flooded back. I reached up and swiped away at tears.
The Sarai Kar began speaking in a small voice.
I know well the pain of lost comrades your uncle felt, Kamasi. I mourn for him. But his belief that he and his friend were right in no way means they were. When that dome collapsed, my husband was crushed. We lost a half-dozen friends, and I was left alone with three other apprentices. We made a new beginning from the tragedy, and yet this memory would seek to have us believe we were walking the path of evil.
I nodded my head. The memory proves it. The writing on the tiles, I recognize it from Yavin 4. It's of Sith origin.
The Sarai Kar nodded.
Our masters had uncovered information about Sith techniques. They learned that the Jedi had perverted Sith teaching, and our masters were returning us to the true way. Jen Sarai is a Sith word for the hidden followers of truth. As the Sarai Kar, I am the keeper of that truth. We are not evil.
Luke shook his head. In fact, you are not. I frowned at him. They were following Sith practices. Are you forgetting Exar Kun and all that? Not at all, Kieran. They were being taught the Jedi way by people who had accepted Sith philosophies. But their masters had not yet found the hooks by which they could be open to the dark side. And then after the deaths of their masters, they continued learning, but did so with the orientation of protecting themselves from the Jedi. They dedicated themselves to defense, choosing the correct path for the wrong reasons. Luke dropped to one knee before the Sarai Kar. You are fully committed to your community. This is what has kept you from the dark side. Even when your people helped Tavira, they did so to protect you and Susiri. This is good, but it is not the true whole of the Jedi tradition. Luke gave her a heartwarming smile. To be a Jedi is to be committed to the defense of everyone. Here you have not been open to those calls, those sacrifices, and this has limited your access to the Force and all it offers. I have an academy that could teach you or some of your apprentices about this grander Jedi tradition, if you wish.
It is an offer I shall consider.
She shivered.
Could I have been wrong all these years?
I smiled at her. You did what you felt was right, to save others from being hurt. That is never wrong. My Jedi master rose.
It is very right. We can just make it more so.
Kieran, he is the product of one Jedi tradition, and me, I am born of yet a different one. You and your Jen Sarai are just part of a third. If you will permit it, we would welcome you into the greater Jedi tradition of service, so that all of our ways, woven together, will make us so strong we can never again be torn apart. This is Anthony Heal. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars I, Jedi by Michael A. Stackpole. This program was produced by David Ratkin and directed by Lars Howell. Abridgment by Sharon Matlin. I, Jedi is a production of Lucasfilm Limited. Copyright 1998. All rights reserved. The book I, Jedi is available wherever Bantam books are sold.